This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Now you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Everything we have been up to Sunday morning after a big weekend of football. That includes speaking to the CEO of Dubai Airport's Paul Griffiths. He had a bit of an announcement for us. T1, Terminal 1, is reopening. That was exclusively on the Business Breakfast. If you want to hear why and his projections for the second half of the year, keep listening. We've also been looking at the surge in the dollar, speaking to Shadi Shaha Al-Borno about what it means for us, and spending patterns around the world. It seems that we are spending less on staying in and more on going out. Plus, we spoke to an official from the Department of Health in Abu Dhabi, Dr. Omar Najim, about a new drug that's being brought into the country to treat COVID. All of that, plus Serena answered your questions.
Ask Serena.
Morning, Serena.
Morning, guys.
So let's talk about aviation. Let's talk about reopening these flights to those three key markets.
Yes, Dubai has updated travel protocols for inbound passengers from India, South Africa and Nigeria. So this comes into effect this week, Wednesday, June 23rd. There are conditions. So only passengers who are fully vaccinated, as in they've received two doses, can travel, and it needs to be a UAE-approved vaccine. So this is the case for India and South Africa, but not for Nigeria. They've not specified that particular specification, so to speak, for Nigeria. Also for India, only passengers with a valid residence visa will be allowed into the country. You will also need to have a negative PCR test. Doesn't matter which country you're coming from. It can't be more than 48 hours old before departure. UAE nationals are exempt from this. With the PCR test, there are some added requirements for India and Nigeria. For flights from India, only QR-coded test certificates are accepted. You can actually see that, the QR code you've got on the Al Hosn app. So that's the type of thing that you are looking for. Passengers must also do a rapid PCR test 4 hours prior to departure to Dubai. Now, for flights from Nigeria, the negative test certificate should also carry the QR code, but the test must have been conducted by labs approved by the Nigerian government. Then on arrival, PCR test, that is for flights from all three countries, while all travelers from India will need to undergo institutional quarantines. That will be government institutional quarantine, and that is until they receive their negative PCR test result. However, this does not apply if you are a UAE citizen or diplomat.
Salman writes in saying, can you clarify, can my parents visit from Bangalore? They are vaccinated, but they are not UAE residents.
At this time, it is only those with a UAE visa, a residency visa, that will be allowed to board and be accepted into the UAE. So currently at this stage, the answer would be no. But again, watch this space because it's an ever-evolving situation.
Right then. So that's all happening from Wednesday.
Yes, Wednesday, June 23rd.
However, there are some countries for whom travel will stop tomorrow night.
Yes, that's correct. From 11:59 p.m. Monday, June 21st, the UAE has announced it will be suspending all inbound flights from Liberia, Sierra Leone and Namibia. So this will include all journeys by national and international carriers coming into the country. The GCAA clarified that the travel suspension includes inbound transit passengers, with the exception of transit flights coming to the UAE and then heading on to these countries. Cargo flights operate as normal. This does not affect UAE nationals and their first degree relatives. Diplomatic missions between the UAE and the three countries, official delegations, businessmen's planes, provided they've had those prior approvals, golden and silver residency permit holders, if you have an essential job based on the classification of the ICA, and staff members of UAE embassies in the three countries, they are also excluded from this decision. But with those categories I've just mentioned, there are certain requirements. Again, PCR test to board, results can't be more than 48 hours old. You also need to be issued by an accredited lab and carry QR codes. 10-day quarantine and PCR tests on arrival, and then another PCR test on days 4 and 8.
It is a lot for the guys down at Dubai International Airport to digest. We've been speaking to the CEO this morning, Paul Griffiths. We asked him in particular, what preparations are you making for those passengers from India, South Africa and Nigeria, and the new protocols?
We have just finished, along with DHA, and Pure Health the construction of a COVID testing lab on the south side of the airport. That will boost the amount of COVID tests that we can process simultaneously and greatly improve the response time to those tests. We are, I think, something like 58 countries at the moment are requiring COVID tests on arrival. So as the passenger numbers ramp up again, we are going to need that testing facility. So we're very well geared up to support the return of passengers from South Africa and Nigeria, and ready to open up from passengers, particularly from Europe, as the EU is look set to introduce the COVID passports by the 1st of July. And the prospect of the US opening up, of course, is very real at the moment. The UAE to the US has always been open, and we hope that some of the flows, perhaps from India when India reopens, will be very beneficial for us at the airport as well.
You can hear the full interview with Paul Griffiths on the Bite Size Business Breakfast. That'll be available for download from about 10:30 this morning. More from him throughout the show as well. Very quickly on Paul, one of the things that he mentioned was that he thinks by autumn they're going to be back to 80% of pre-pandemic levels. That struck me as quite high. 80% of pre-pandemic by autumn. He is expecting a lot of countries to open up in the next, what, 4 or 5 months or so. So we shall watch this space. Now, other stories that you're looking at, Serena Kelly. Mohab. There are rumours doing the rounds, and Mohab wants to crack down on them.
Yeah, so UAE residents are being urged to obtain news from official channels and government sources in the country. That's just something that we've reiterated constantly since last year. So this comes after an audio recording apparently has been circulating on social media platforms with false information concerning the COVID-19 pandemic. So the Ministry of Health and Prevention, they've denied the contents of the recording, just urging the public, please verify any information received before sharing it with others. The health authorities also reminded the public that spreading rumours and false information is an offence punishable by law. So we reported back in April of this year, there's a jail sentence of no less than 1 year. That came out on April Fool's Day. But then last year, we had also updated fines and regulations when it comes to COVID-19. And the message then was violators will face a fine of up to 20,000 dirhams for publishing or republishing false and misleading health information. So there's serious penalties with that, and it's just not worth it. So just make sure you've done your due diligence before you're actually sharing with others.
Or go on the radio and have a daily podcast.
Have a listen. Yeah, listen to the Business Breakfast.
Kelly didn't say it. It's not true.
Exactly. Not quite officially endorsed by Mohab yet, but the next best thing. We haven't got long. Do you crunch the numbers on the cases and vaccines for us?
Yeah, so this time last week, you were looking at figures of 2,123. That was after more than 249,000 tests. Yesterday, after more than 267,000 tests, they announced new cases, 2,109, along with 5 fatalities, 2,075 recoveries. And active cases, we are up from 19,163 to 19,192.
Thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Erin News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we are this morning, talking COVID medications. We have a big interview this morning out of Abu Dhabi. We are having a look at a new COVID antiviral treatment, which Abu Dhabi has become the first city in the world to receive. We are joined by Dr. Omar Najim, who is the Executive Office Director at the Emirates Department of Health. Dr. Omar, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Brandy, and good morning to all of your listeners. Thank you for having me.
Well, you've worked with Etihad and others to get the first shipment, or plane load rather, of Sotrovimab into the Emirate. Why is that medication so important? What does it do?
Thank you, Brandy. So the importance of this medication stems from the fact that we are in the middle of a global pandemic. The treatment it's a new virus. I know we've been living through it for the last year and a half, but it's still, in scientific terms, it is a new virus. So medications to treat it didn't exist before. Many have been developed, but the one that Abu Dhabi was the first place to get it, and UAE, last week, is one of the most effective, according to our assessment, according to the scientific research that was done. So Sotrovimab is a group of fairly new group of medications called monoclonal antibodies. What it does, it fights the virus and prevents it from attaching itself to the cells of the human body. Hence, it prevents the infection progressing to severe or death by a very significant amount. So the research has shown that it can reduce that by about 85%. So the earlier we get it, the more lives we will be saving, and the less patient will be needing to be admitted. Hence, it's very important, and the fact that Abu Dhabi and UAE being very keen to get it as soon as possible.
How did we manage to get it so quickly? That's within 3 weeks of it getting approved.
That's correct. It's the relationship and the agreement on getting this medication didn't start 3 weeks ago. So the conversation started about almost 2 months ago. We have a specialized team within Abu Dhabi Department of Health that scoured the world for any new medications, any new research that potentially could be promising, including antivirals, including vaccines, including even new ways of managing the pandemic. So the team has identified the clinical research, and GSK, the GlaxoSmithKline, engaged with us very early on, and we expressed a firm interest on getting the medications once it gets approved. So once it gets approved, we already had the wheels going, so to speak. So we already had, we identified what the process is going to be, how we're going to get it in country, in collaborations with GSK, Tihad Cargo and Rafid, and ourselves. So once the FDA approved, we collaborated with the Ministry of Health and Prevention on getting it approved and reviewing of the scientific evidence. And that's how we got it straight away within 3 weeks.
Is there much competition for drugs like this? How do you, I don't want to say get it over other countries because that sounds nasty, but are there others also in the queue?
Well, I wouldn't call it a competition. So every country has its own assessment of how it needs and how urgent it needs the medication to get to serve their population and beyond. So each country has its own processes. The competition is more about developing the new medications or developing the new vaccines or developing the new ways. And it's a competition that is leading more to collaboration rather than putting boundaries and I want to get it before anybody else. So I wouldn't call it competition, but rather proactive approaches to getting these medications or these treatments, so to speak.
So who will it be given to? At what stage does a coronavirus patient become eligible for it?
Sure. It's applicable to a specific group of patients. So it's applicable to, it's going to be given to mild and moderate. So it's very early stage of the infection status. So once somebody gets identified as positive and they have symptoms and their condition is mild to moderate, then this will be offered to them. However, it's going to be offered to patients with high risk. The high risk are the ones who with associated diseases, so high blood pressure, diabetes, immune deficiency diseases and the likes. They will be offered these medications because it's proven to be most effective in these patients and elderly as well in preventing the death and admission to hospital.
Does it work on all strains of the virus, the beta, the delta?
So far it does. So according to the latest scientific that's been published, it works on most of the ones that are varying degrees, most of the ones that are known to date. So it does work on the delta, it does work on the alpha and the beta and the rest of the variant.
What do we know, Dr. Omar, about which of those strains are here?
In what sense?
Well, if it works on all three of the strains, that's brilliant. Do we need it for all three strains?
You need it for the different strains. As with any other medication, you need to work on the coronavirus. Of course, it's not 100% effective. It's 85% effective. And the different, you would like to cover most of the strains with these medications. But most people get infected one or two, so you hardly get people getting infected with two different strains.
And how badly do we need this medication here? How severe are our coronavirus cases?
Yeah, it's another tool in the toolbox that we currently have. It's important to have it. If it's reducing infection and death, then it's more than welcome. It's always you get to assess medications by the value it brings. And this medication, when it starts rolling out, and in fact it started rolling out on Thursday, and many patients had started receiving it, then it's promising to reduce the infection and the death. Even one case of infection prevention, of infection severity or death, is worthwhile all the efforts.
Are we seeing many cases here go to the severe stage?
It's the natural way of how it's happening across the world. So there are certain percentages of patients get infected, certain percentages of these patients get to be admitted. I think the global rate is around 30%. They get to be admitted to the hospital and need more concentrated treatment, and certain percentages progress, unfortunately, to death. So with this medication, we're hoping to reduce that percentage even lower than what UAE currently is. You have to bear in mind that UAE has one of the lowest fatality rate in coronavirus compared to many other countries globally. And this is another area, and coupled with we always say, coupled with the vaccination program, coupled with the general precautions that we always ask the public to do around washing hands, wearing masks, and keeping healthy distances.
Dr. Ona Najem, the Executive Office Director at Abu Dhabi's Department of Health, speaking to us this morning about that shipment of Sotrovimab, which has arrived in the capital.
And it's interesting because we haven't heard so much lately about treatments, have we? Everyone's been talking about vaccines for the past few months. That's been the story. I remember what, a year or so ago, there was lots of talk of treatments like Remdesivir, and there was the Donald Trump faux pas about bleach, which obviously was complete nonsense. But treatment's back in the spotlight now.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's get some more detail on one of those top stories now. The mighty US dollar, the greenback, flexing its muscles at the back end of last week. Shadi Shah Al-Borno has been looking into this. He is Senior Director of Group Research at Emirates NBD. So we asked him for his take on why the dollar had such a strong run last week.
It's all about shifting timelines, whereas just in March, most Fed officials predicted that the current rates would be maintained until at least 2024. The consensus has shifted towards an earlier liftoff in 2023, thus signaling the central bank's belief in a faster transition to a full recovery that would warrant tighter monetary policy. Now, the Fed's projections call for at least two rate increases to be expected in 2023. The rise in the dollar, the best week since April 2020, last week, largely as yields on short-term treasuries in the U.S. Rose, pricing in that future expected rate rise.
So the best week since April of last year for the dollar. What does it mean for us here in the UAE?
In terms of impact on the UAE, given the dirham's peg to the U.S. dollar, expect interest rates to rise in kind with rate hikes in the US over the coming years.
Shadi Al-Borno of Emirates NBD. Brandy, that's the US dollar. You've been looking at the Aussie dollar.
Well, I've been looking at spending patterns, UK, the US and Australia, because there is some evidence that we are, and we chatted about this last week, there is some evidence that we are buying experiences rather than things. We've got the British retail sales numbers out. They were down 1.4% for May compared to April. What was up was people visiting restaurants rather than buying supermarket food. And this reflects what's been seen in some areas in the US, suggesting that now that you don't have to eat everything at home, people would quite like to go out. Thank you very much. The same as in Australia. In March 2020, when a lot of restaurants, etc., were shut, food retail was high, particularly carbs, by the way. People buying a lot of cereal.
We all need a good comfort carb now and then.
Exactly. When things started to open up in April, You saw the opposite. You saw restaurants and cafes doing well, and you saw a lot of food sales falling off there. If we also have a look at what people were buying in the US when things were opening up, they were buying swimsuits, they were buying sunscreen, they were buying luggage, suggesting that people were thinking about a little bit of a staycay. The Guardian this morning, story about the price of getting a caravan or checking into a holiday site in the UK could cost you a holiday park with a caravan self-catering in Cornwall. You're looking at £3,699 for four people for 7 nights. Or you could go to an all-inclusive beach hotel in Malta, £2,500 for the same amount of time.
Nearly £4,000 for a week in a caravan. That's 20-odd thousand dirhams. Wow. That is, to use Tom's phrase, punchy.
Very punchy.
Tom, you've been looking at cycling.
From punchy to punctures, see? Again, I marvel at the investment into cycling in this part of the world. And we've got more over the course of the weekend. We had news coming through from Dubai Media Office, from the office of His Highness Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Crown Prince of Dubai, Chairman of the Executive Council of Dubai. He's given the go-ahead for the construction of yet another significant cycling facility here, cycling path stretching 16 kilometres along Dubai's Jumeirah Beach.
Basically, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be along the coastline. It's going to connect the existing tracks from the canal and King Salman bin Abdulaziz Al Saud Street. So basically, we're getting the infrastructure that is joining up around town, if you like. Dedicated cycling tracks constructed in Dubai up until the end of this year, 2020. That's this year, yeah? That was last year. will extend to a total of 463 kilometres. So that's what we've got at the moment. And yeah, then we've got obviously dedication for more tracks. And it just gives you a little insight, doesn't it, of the investment that goes into cycling. There's been a huge amount put in place already. In a lot of places we go, well, we're done there. We're catered for the cyclists out there. But they continue with these developments. And it's this sort of linking up, if you like. Yeah, we know Al Qudra, we know Maidan, those sort of areas. But the fact that they're now linking those in. And, you know, I know of a couple of people who now cycle to work because they can. There is enough cycle track from their houses out in areas like Al Barari and other areas around the city into DIFC, into Business Bay, into areas like that. They can use cycle tracks. So they cycle to work in the morning, have a shower, and cycle home at night.
Presumably, if you live in Al Barari and you're cycling to work, you're doing it for fitness reasons rather than to save money.
Yeah, fitness, lifestyle, bit of a change. You can sort of see it. But the fact that the infrastructure is there, I think it's just it's great. And the fact that it is being extended, continued, is good news for the cycling mad community here. I'd love to know what the cycling industry is worth here. It's because those bikes do not come cheap, that's for sure.
No, but it is the sort of thing. I mean, that's the new, no offence, Andy, who I know is listening and is already WhatsApping me. Ooh, cycling, my favourite subject. His WhatsApp photo is indeed Andy in a helmet and Lycra. Mr F, it's the new midlife crisis, isn't it? It's having the cycle rack on the back of your car.
It is, yeah. When you bought the Porsche, you need to buy a cycle rack and put a very expensive bike on the back of your Porsche. That's when you know you're really struggling in your 40s.
Let's Rich talk about from experience.
40s will be over very soon.
I met someone at a party recently. I know Richard. I used to do triathlons with him. Emphasis on the word used to.
I've seen your personal trainer in about 5 hours' time. Let's see how that goes.
Which one?
the Serbian.
Thanks.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk aviation now. Good news that flights to India, Nigeria and South Africa back up and running between Dubai from this week. But there are other big developments at Dubai International Airport as well. Joining us now on the line to share those with us is the Chief Executive, Paul Griffiths. Morning, Paul.
Good morning, Richard.
So tell us your big news.
Well, the big news is after 15 months of being closed, DXB is now back at full capacity. From June the 24th, we're gradually reopening Terminal 1, And all the airlines that are currently sharing Terminal 3, all the foreign airlines, will be moving back into T1 over a period of a few days, which is very good news because it gives us the capacity and service levels that will hopefully support what we're seeing, a large recovery in the markets over the summer as we look forward to the autumn. With Expo only 3 months away now, I think it's a very important and positive development to support the expansion of the airlines and indeed to allow Emirates to have exclusive use of Terminal 3 again.
Okay, so that's good news. This is clearly a response to demand. What kind of capacity are we seeing now in terms of flights per month? Let's look at what you're expecting in June 2021 compared with, say, June 2019.
Well, the traffic throughput clearly has been much lower. We're about 1.5 million passengers a month at the moment. But if you look around and see how many of our major markets are currently closed to outbound traffic, that's hardly surprising. Normal traffic numbers in a typical June 2019, for example, as you say, were about 8 million a month. So we're clearly less than 20% of capacity. However, the outlook for the end of the month, once the schools break up, and of course we've got the Eid holiday, and then hopefully the gradual opening up of markets across Europe, some markets in Southeast Asia and the US, that's going to, I think, give us great grounds for optimism that we're going to see some recovery, hopefully to something close to about the 80% pre-COVID levels we were seeing by the autumn of this year.
So you think we could be back to 80% by autumn of this year?
It's looking that way. Certainly the number of point-to-point journeys I think people are going to be taking to and from the UAE by the autumn is going to look at something like that. Because, of course, as you know from last year, we are pretty much open to every single country in the world in terms of inbound traffic. And as the summer heat cools off and with all of the accommodation options, plus the 50th anniversary, the Dubai Expo and the Dubai Air Show, there's a lot to look forward to. So in anticipation of that, we're opening our T1 facility in readiness for a recovery, which hopefully will be pretty strong towards the end of the summer.
So you're going to be welcoming passengers from South Africa, from Nigeria and also from India later on this week. What kind of preparations are you making for that? Because the protocols are quite significant, aren't they?
They are very significant. As I think you're aware, we have just finished, along with DHA and Pure Health, the construction of a COVID testing lab on the south side of the airport. That will boost the amount of COVID tests that we can process simultaneously and greatly improve the response time to those tests. We are, I think, something like 58 countries at the moment are requiring COVID tests on arrival. So as the passenger numbers ramp up again, we are going to need that testing facility. So we're very well geared up to support the return of passengers from South Africa and Nigeria and ready to open up from passengers, particularly from Europe, as the EU is set to introduce the COVID passports by the 1st of July. And the prospect of the US opening up, of course, is very real at the moment. The UAE to the US has always been open, and we hope that some of the flows, perhaps from India, when India reopens, will be very beneficial for us at the airport as well.
A couple of other big source markets, maybe you can give an update on those. First of all, China was not only one of the biggest source markets, one of the fastest growing for Dubai before the pandemic. What are the prospects of Chinese tourists coming back anytime soon?
Well, I think hopefully once the domestic situation in China has proven to be completely secure, which I think it is. I mean, obviously, China is being as strict with their measures as we are here within the UAE. So I think that important market, hopefully by the autumn, will start to rebound. So we're looking forward to the Far East. I know that Emirates are starting back to operations to Thailand, to Phuket. And we're seeing route openings to other places like Malta in Europe. And of course, Malta is on the green list for the UK. So some quite creative routings, I think, are being looked at by travellers as they're planning their summer holidays at the moment. And I think the answer is that, you know, there are going to be some quite exotic stopovers taking place.
Finally, you mentioned the UK. There are another key source market, effectively closed at the moment. Any prospect of that reopening anytime soon? What are you hearing in your negotiations?
Well, I think the thing is, we're all aware that the UK at the moment is having quite a torrid time. The Delta variant seems to be giving some quite bad news. So, unfortunately, I don't think there's any prospect of the UK opening up to the UAE in the near future. Although, of course, as you heard last week, there are some discussions on whether evidence of having had an approved vaccine might exempt people from the quarantine requirements. If that's the case, and obviously with direct flights having resumed between Dubai and London Heathrow and other points in the UK, that I think is a step in the right direction, but no particular predictions as to when the UK market will once again be available to travellers from Dubai at this point in time.
Paul, Sarah writes in with a question saying, as the airport gets busier, how are you going to manage queuing?
Well, clearly, that's a very good question. And the idea of opening Terminal 1 at this particular point in time was to make absolutely sure we could maintain the appropriate distance between people. And obviously, we're trying to eliminate rather than manage if we possibly can. And having that extra capacity will mean that passenger journeys hopefully will be pretty smooth. But clearly, customer safety is absolutely paramount. And we're making absolutely sure that we keep people at the appropriate social distance and obviously increase our cleaning regime to make sure that the airport is sparkling clean.
Paul, great talking to you as ever. Appreciate your time this morning. Congratulations on reopening Terminal 1. Good news for not just Dubai Airport, but for Dubai as a city. That is the CEO of Dubai Airports, Paul Griffiths. So 80% capacity, he says, by the autumn of this year. That seems ambitious, but I'm glad to hear it.
It does, and it also makes me think that they must be feeling pretty good about summer bookings as well.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, this is if we're running at 1.5 at the moment, less than 20% capacity at the moment, or 20% of not capacity, 20% of what we were doing in June 2019 at the moment. That is quite a leap. But where do we stand with summer holiday plans at the moment in the studio? Anything booked? Putting things together, Thomas.
No comment.
Thomas is taking the Fifth Amendment.
No comment. Moving goalposts. That's all I can say at the moment. Goalposts are removing. However, I did have a couple of friends who went off over the course of the weekend. They've gone back to their house in France, and they said that a lot of the regulations had been eased in France. But again, it's the issue of what jab you got and what jab you didn't get. That's the big issue getting in and out of France at the moment.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.